Josh Haston here, Israel Uncensored, on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. It is Monday, the 21st of September, 2020, the 3rd of Tishrei, 5781. This is our first podcast for the new year here on the Land of Israel Network. It's an honor to be with you. I am in Jerusalem, the eternal capital of the Jewish people and the state of Israel, just outside the walls of the Old City. Don't forget, you can get in touch with me during the week, Josh at thelandofisrael.com, on Facebook, Joshua Haston, or Josh Haston Israel Advocacy and Journalism, on Twitter at Josh Haston, and on Instagram as well. Hope everyone out there who celebrated the Jewish New Year, Rosh Hashanah, had a meaningful time. A Rosh Hashanah, probably, I don't know if like never before, but something we have not experienced in a very long time, not in this generation, a Rosh Hashanah under lockdown here in Israel and in many places around the world. I personally prayed both days of Rosh Hashanah at an outdoor quorum on the street where I live. And everyone set up socially distanced gazebos in order to block out the hot sun. And it's still hot here. I think today's actually the first day of autumn, of fall, if I'm not mistaken. September 21st. Is that correct? I believe that's correct. But it's still really, really hot here in Israel. Summer-like conditions. So we set up the pergola or gazebo, if you will, and prayed for 2 days there outdoors, socially distanced, on Rosh Hashanah, the start of the Jewish year, Yom HaDin, Judgment Day, if you will, leading up to Yom Kippur next week, Atonement Day. I think that's how you say it in English. Anyway, hope you're safe. Hope you're doing well. Hope you had some good food, some apples and honey. And after 2 days of eating, today, of course, is a fast day, Tzom Gedalia. And I found a very interesting article from Eish HaTorah, Eish.com, explaining exactly why we fast today, what Tzom Gedalia is all about. I'm going to read that entire article. It's not that long. I'm going to read it a little bit later here in the podcast. But to start off, we are under a lockdown here in Israel, a government-imposed lockdown. So how did I get to Jerusalem today? Well, That is a good question, but I am in Jerusalem today. There are a lot of exceptions. I mean, I work basically in quarantine as a freelance journalist in the work I do for Gush Etzion and these podcasts. I am essentially alone most of the day unless I have a meeting, and those meetings now exist on Zoom. So I am able to go to Jerusalem. If necessary, I can use my press card because there's always freedom of the press. And from what I understand, the police can't block journalists from getting to where they need to go. But that being said, I'm not covering any of the demonstrations, anti-Netanyahu demonstrations. And we had another one last night, even though there is a lockdown, which I kind of don't understand how that is possible. Apparently, it was a socially distanced lockdown. I don't know if that was held or not. But it kind of feels like a lockdown without the lockdown. In theory, you can only go 1,000 meters or a kilometer from your house unless XYZ, PDQ, you have a lot of different reasons to go past that 1,000 meters, including going to work, as long as it's not in a restaurant or a hotel or a school. So anyway, Times of Israel reports this morning that Israel's roads saw major congestion here Monday morning as many commuters returned to work following the holiday weekend despite the nationwide lockdown, with police choking off main traffic arteries by setting up checkpoints and closing off roads. Under the rules of the lockdown, workplaces in the private sector that do not serve customers in person may keep 100% of their workforce coming to offices, and essential workers and others are also expected to continue to be allowed to move, despite the restrictions which started on Friday. Dozens of police roadblocks were set up across the country to enforce travel restrictions and make sure only those who were permitted were on the street. So when I came into Jerusalem this morning, there was a checkpoint set up on a major road on Derech Hebron, Hebron Road, but it was already 9 o'clock, and at that point, from what I understand, because the police realized that they were causing so much traffic by setting up these checkpoints, at that point at 9 a.m., they had stopped checking cars to make sure that those who are going into work into Jerusalem were legally able to do so. So I got into Jerusalem. The checkpoint was open. I'm not talking about the security checkpoint. I'm talking about the coronavirus checkpoint. So that was already opened, and cars were whizzing by that checkpoint. And I made it here near record time. You know, I don't want to say that's a perk of the coronavirus, because there aren't really that many perks where people are sick and dying in hospitals. But in terms of how I got here, how I got to where I sit to do these podcasts in Jerusalem, it was not a problem at all. Let's see what happens on the way back home later on this afternoon, evening. Despite the checkpoints, traffic reports showed lower than usual traffic volume, indicating that many were indeed staying home, complying with the lockdown. Parts of the normally jammed Ayalon Freeway, that's in Tel Aviv, saw traffic flowing with a volume normally seen on weekends. At the same time, the Jerusalem Post reports that the country looks to be heading towards a period of even tighter restrictions, as the coronavirus cabinet is expected to meet tomorrow on Tuesday to begin discussions about what new steps will be needed to stop the ever-growing rate of coronavirus infection. So right now it's supposed to be a 3-week lockdown, but it may extend even longer. On the table, according to the J Post, closing synagogues, restricting demonstrations, and shutting down the private sector except for essential workers. I still believe a journalist is an essential worker under by definition. Obviously, I don't consider myself on the same level as a doctor or a nurse, but I still think I'll be okay. But many others may be forced to stay home. And I personally think it would be a good idea. I understand freedom of expression, freedom of speech, and all that. But these demonstrations, I mean, you're playing with fire with so many people gathered in one area. I also would say, I mean, where I live, the synagogues were open, but very, very limited in terms of the number of people who were able to enter. I don't know, closing synagogues altogether, I guess it's only fair if they close the synagogue altogether that they restrict these demonstrations. The education system here in Israel will remain closed for at least the next 3 weeks, according to Roni Gamzu, the coronavirus czar, as he spoke on Channel 12 News on Sunday night. Police said that they issued at least 3,000 tickets on Saturday alone, 629 people not wearing masks in public spaces, and another 2,044 were handed out to those who ignored the rules of traveling no more than a kilometer for their home for a non-approved reason. And according to the czar, the coronavirus czar Gamzu, our numbers are reaching emergency levels, a situation where we could face 600 deaths a month, God forbid. And he ordered hospitals to add new coronavirus wards. Gamzu told Channel 12 he fears the number of patients in serious condition could reach 800 by the end of the week, a number that has been frequently cited as the maximum Israeli hospitals can cope with. Gamzu said he feared that at the current rate, Israel will see some 20 deaths per day, again, 600 per month, nearly half of the national toll since the start of the pandemic. So while on paper our numbers went down over the last couple days, there were definitely less tests carried out over Rosh Hashanah. So I don't know exactly where we stand at this very moment. But according to the czar, the coronavirus commissioner, we are still headed in the wrong direction. And therefore, tomorrow, Tuesday, steps may be taken in order to implement even stricter coronavirus restrictions. That is the situation here, folks. Let's hope and let's pray, literally pray, that our tefillot, our prayers, which we said over the high holidays, will be answered. It'll be a year of health and happiness and a big focus on the health, that we will carry out true repentance, and hopefully that will stop the plague of coronavirus. Switching gears to other news here, Jerusalem Post reports that the U.S. announced on Saturday night UN sanctions are being reimposed on Iran. The snapback of sanctions was triggered 30 days ago following the UN Security Council's vote not to extend the arms embargo on the Islamic Republic. Russia and China opposed the American move to extend the arms embargo, and the UK, France, and Germany raised objections as well. 13 of the 15 members of the UN Security Council have said they do not intend to comply with the snapback. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo announced on Saturday night that this, in fact, was being implemented. He said the Trump administration has always understood that the greatest threat to peace in the Middle East comes from the Islamic Republic of Iran, whose violent efforts to spread revolution have killed thousands and upended the lives of millions of innocent people. So the real question is where is the moral compass of the rest of the world? Russia, China, France, Germany, the UK, all the other members of the Security Council who are not in favor of these snapback sanctions being imposed on Iran. What are they thinking? Is it money? Is it their desire to sell arms to Iran? I mean, the greatest sponsor of terrorism in the world, if this does not happen, will be able to continue their path of aggression unimposed. And these other countries are not doing anything about it. That's why the UN is one big joke. In addition to the arms embargo, the U.S. sanctions would include restrictions such as the ban on Iran engaging in enrichment and related activities, the prohibition of ballistic missile testing and development, and sanctions on the transfer of nuclear and missile-related technologies from other places to Iran, among other measures. I mean, it makes complete sense to me. According to Seth Franzman in an article in today's paper, a senior U.S. official alleged that Iran is resuming work with North Korea on long-range missiles, and Iran could also have enough material for a nuclear weapon by the end of the year. That's the reality we're living in, folks. And our Prime Minister Netanyahu has been talking about this for a decade now. The U.S. gets it, and apparently the rest of the world just doesn't care, doesn't get it, wants to sell arms to Iran, wants to make money off this thing. So we really have to hope that the U.S. sanctions will be effectively reinstated, that they will be enforced, and that Iran doesn't get a nuclear weapon. People, this is what we're talking about, ballistic missiles and the ability to build a nuclear bomb. And people, what are they going to say the day after? God forbid. What are they going to say? We didn't know. How can they claim that? How can any of these countries, if Iran goes nuclear, how can any of these countries claim that they didn't know what was going on or that they actually did enough to try to stop it? Because they'll be liars and hypocrites if Iran gets a nuclear weapon. Moving on to good news, Israel National News, Arut Sheva reports that Prime Minister Netanyahu and the President of Honduras, Juan Orlando Hernandez, spoke on Sunday and agreed to open embassies in the national capitals of the two countries. In other words, Honduras will be moving their embassy to Jerusalem, joining the U.S., Guatemala, and we'll see who else gets on board with the move of their embassy to Jerusalem. A joint statement from the two countries stated that Honduras will open an embassy in Jerusalem. Israel also opened an embassy in the capital of Honduras. They hope to complete the move by the end of 2020. Prime Minister Netanyahu expressed his appreciation for the true friendship and firm support that Israel has received from Honduras and reiterated Israel's commitment to strengthening the partnership between the countries, including through cooperation in the fields of tourism, investment, technology, agriculture, education, and trade. Those of you who believe that Israel is isolated, think again. It seems like every single day, whether it's the United Arab Emirates or Bahrain or Honduras or Guatemala or countries in Africa, slowly, countries are getting on the Israel train. Don't miss the train, folks. If you're still hating Israel, if you're still one of these BDS haters, your time is almost over. Your hate campaigns are not working. You're almost done. Of course, BDS, the goal of that movement, if you want to call it that, is the destruction of the state of Israel. More and more countries are getting on the Israel bandwagon. So I suggest you do so as well. Of course, if Israel comes up with a coronavirus vaccine, you guys will be the first in line to take it, I know, because you are hypocrites. But Israel is not an isolated country. I know we don't have the votes yet at the UN. I know because of Europe and because of some of the other Arab countries who are not on board yet. But things will change, folks. Things are improving each and every day. If my voice sounds like it's breaking up or doesn't sound the same, that is because I am fasting today. Today's the fast of Gedalia, so I cannot take a sip of water here as I'm doing the show. So it's a little bit difficult to do radio when you have to fast. I wanted to go to this article here on Aish.com. A lot of people, myself included, don't know all the details about why we fast on some Gedalia. As I mentioned before, yeah, you just ate for 2 days straight. Fast is not the worst thing in the world. But here is, I might read this whole thing through, the reasons why we fast on some Gedalia. Here's the story. Again, according to Aish.com, the day after Rosh Hashanah marks the fast of Gedalia, one of the, quote, minor fast days in the Jewish calendar year. The fast begins in the early morning at dawn and ends in the evening at dusk. Where I live, it began this morning at 4:56 a.m. I actually got up and chugged a Gatorade so that I would not be as thirsty, if that helps. I mean, that's just a custom I have. What is the meaning of this fast, and why does it occur during the intermediate days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? Here's the story. At the time of the destruction of the first temple, 2,500 years ago, the majority of the Jewish people were exiled, including the 10 tribes. The eventual conqueror Nebuchadnezzar, he's the Babylonian conqueror, later eased harsh restrictions and allowed some Jews to remain in the land of Israel. He even appointed a Jew named Gedalia to administrate the territory. Gradually, more Jews who'd escaped from the horrors of the war into neighboring countries began to return to their homes in Israel. Gedalia was realistic about the limitations of Jewish sovereignty and understood that for his own self-preservation, the Jews in Israel needed to fully cooperate with the nation who had conquered their land. So that there is a little bit controversial, I will say. A lot of people felt that Israel should not, the nation of Israel should not have cooperated with the Babylonians. Okay, but that being said, a Jew named Yishmael ben Netanya, I believe, decided that he was going to kill Gedalia and many other Jews and Babylonians. He actually was against his policies. He didn't believe Gedalia and others should cooperate, and he killed Gedalia and other Jews. In the aftermath of Gedalia's murder, the Jews feared reprisal from the king of Babylon. They thought to flee to Egypt to save themselves, but since Egypt was a morally corrupt society, the Jews were in a quandary, weighing the physical threat against the spiritual danger. So they turned to the prophet Jeremiah, who was secluded in mourning, to ask for advice. For an entire week, Jeremiah pleaded with God for an answer. Finally, on Yom Kippur, he was answered. Jeremiah called the Jews and told them to stay in Israel and everything would be fine. God was planning to make the Babylonians act mercifully towards the Jews, and before long, all the exiled Jews would be permitted to return to their own soil. But Jeremiah told them if the Jews decided to go to Egypt, the sword from which they were running would kill them there. Unfortunately, the prophet's words did not penetrate, and the people refused to believe. All the Jews remaining in Israel packed their bags and went down to Egypt. They even kidnapped Jeremiah and took him with them. Now the destruction was complete. The land of Israel was completely barren. You can guess what happened next. A few years later, Babylon conquered Egypt and tens of thousands of Jewish exiles were completely wiped out. The lone survivor of this massacre was Jeremiah. His prophecy had become painfully true. The initial event, the murder of Gedaliah, had been likened to the destruction of the Holy Temple because it cost Jewish lives and brought the end of Jewish settlement in Israel for many years. So it is because of the fact that the murder of Gedaliah, represents the end of Jewish settlement in Israel. That is the main reason we fast today. Again, whether you agree with his politics or not, the man was murdered, and therefore it brought an end, eventually an end to the Jewish presence in Israel for many years. The prophets therefore declared that the anniversary of this tragedy should be a day of fasting. This day is the third day of Tishrei, the day immediately after Rosh Hashanah. So I hope that better explains why we fast today here, why it's called Tzom Gedaliah. Again, you know, regardless if you agree or disagree with Gedaliah's policies, his death did start this chain reaction in which there was no longer, for a long time, a Jewish presence here in the land of Israel. So for that, we mourn. Speaking of a Jewish presence, and this will conclude today's podcast. It's a little bit of a light news day, just because it's the day after a 2-day holiday. So for better or for worse, and usually when there's less news, that's usually for the better. It's a little bit of a light news day, but we are talking about the First Temple period, and now this last article here shows that proves. Once again, the Jews did return to Israel. A second temple was built, and we have returned once again, and we are headed towards a third temple. But the Jewish press reports a rare archaeological find was discovered, actually, in my neck of the woods in Gush Etzion at an excavation site, a complete inkwell dating to the end of the Second Temple period. The dig is being conducted by the Archaeology Command Unit in the Civil Administration in Judea and Samaria in collaboration with Herzog College. The inkwell, which was discovered inside a large building dating to the Second Temple period, is made of a clay cylinder with a flat base, a round handle, a narrow opening with an inward-leaning rim through which the ink and pen were inserted. Just another example, and things are being discovered each and every day, whether at the City of David in Jerusalem or the many other archaeological sites, excavation sites throughout the country, showing our linkage, the Jewish nation's link to the land of Israel for thousands and thousands of years. That is the reality. Those are the facts. BDS haters and all other deniers of our rights to the land of Israel, the archaeology is proving you wrong time and time again. I mean, we know it already, those of us who love Israel and understand why we're here and, you know, read the Torah and read the Bible and see that we had a presence here. But despite all of that, and those haters who don't accept it, you just can't deny the archaeology and the findings each and every day, which are discovered here in the land of Israel, which prove our connection, our thousands and thousands of year old connection to this place, to our eternal homeland. I want to send a shout out to Benjamin Bresky, engineer extraordinaire, Tabitha Epstein, for everything she does behind the scenes here at the Land of Israel Network. I'll apologize for my voice if it sounds either scratchy or it sounds like I need a drink of water, because I do need a drink of water. It's the fast of Gedaliah. I'll be fasting now until about 7 p.m. this evening. Again, hope everyone out there had a very, very meaningful Jewish New Year for everyone who celebrated. It is the 3rd of Tishrei, 5781. Let's hope this year brings us only good health and happiness and peace and only good things. Again, get in touch with me during the week, josh@thelandofisrael.com, on Facebook, Joshua Haston, or Josh Haston Israel Advocacy and Journalism, on Twitter at Josh Haston, and on Instagram as well. Everyone out there in the wonderful world of ours, stay healthy and be safe. Shalom, shalom. Have a great week from the eternal capital of the Jewish people and the state of Israel. Just thinking out loud, next Monday is Yom Kippur, so I will not be broadcasting. So please, God, we will speak again in 2 weeks. All the best. Gemar Chatima Tova, may you be sealed and inscribed. Inscribed and sealed, that should go in that order. Inscribed and sealed in the Book of Life. Shalom, shalom.
Shalom, everybody. This is Jeremy Gimpel from the Land of Israel Network, but also from the Land of Israel Fellowship. Today, Ari and I and Tehila Gimpel are preparing for the biblical feasts. We have members from 31 countries joining us every week, Sunday, live at 6 p.m. For those that can't make it live, they get a direct recording sent to them. We're growing together. We're learning together. We're celebrating together. The gates are open for all who want to come and join. And so this is a personal invitation to all the listeners out there. If you want to join the Land of Israel Fellowship, just go to thelandofisrael.com/fellowship and you can join us tomorrow as we prepare for the big days ahead.